From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly news magazine on New York State politics and government. Welcome, I'm your host, Brian Shields, filling in this week for Dave Gallettly. Coming up on this week's program, we're fast approaching the April 1st budget deadline, and this week, Governor Cuomo's staff met with legislative leaders to try to hammer out a plan to cover the projected budget deficit. We'll tell you about that. Also, it looks like the state Republican Party may not have a major gubernatorial candidate by the time its party convention rolls around in May. And our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, will discuss a host of political happenings with our frequent guest, New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker. All that, plus much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. New York City has two new faces in the House of Representatives. Voters this week elected two favorites, 31-year-old Republican Susan Molinari in Staten Island and State Assemblyman Jose Serrano in the South Bronx. Both winners easily defeated their competition in the 14th and 18th congressional districts. Molinari will fill the seat held by her father, Guy, who resigned to become Staten Island Borough President. Serrano gets the seat formerly held by Robert Garcia, who resigned after being convicted in the WedTech scandal. The 46-year-old Serrano will be the only Puerto Rican native serving as a full voting member of Congress. Molinari, whose district includes Staten Island and a sliver of Brooklyn, will be the youngest sitting member of Congress. With just days before the beginning of the new fiscal year, Governor Cuomo has given the state legislature a batch of new tax proposals. He's called for a permanent surcharge on New York's business taxes, suggesting a 10% surcharge that would raise $340 million a year. He also told our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, that some of his measures, like a proposed increase in the gas tax, would not be permanent, but others, like the surcharge, would.
Some of them you can sunset after 3 years, because as I envision it, we should be coming out of this certainly by 3 years.
Sunset, so, meaning that they discontinue.
They die. Yeah. So we end the long lines tax after 3 years. You can do some other taxes that continue, like corporate surcharge. It's already clear that the corporate entities in this country have done much better as a result of tax reform than anybody, the President Reagan, the President Bush, any Democrat or Republican in Washington or New York or anywhere anticipated. Business got a bonanza. Now, business is down anyway because of economic slowness, but they got an extraordinary advantage that nobody thought they were going to get from the tax reform that was extremely complicated and unpredictable. So let's do a corporate surcharge that stays in place. All these cuts we do, they should stay in place. But with the tax cut that we want to do, but I have to freeze this year, let's say that it will resume 3 years from now, because the tax cut and the income tax was a good thing for competitiveness sake. So freeze it, but end the freeze after 3 years. Raise some other revenues, but if they're undesirable, like long lines, for one reason or another, terminate them after 3 years. Some revenues that you raise, gas tax, the president, if you're a Republican conservative, or if you're an admirer of the president, as I am, even as a Democrat, then you should pay some attention to what he says. He says, raise your gas tax in New York State. He sends Sam Skinner to us, to his Department of Transportation head, to tell us to do that. And what he's really saying is, if you look at the Rostenkowski plan, if you guys don't do it, we're going to do it in Washington. We're going to make you pay the gas tax increase anyway. Then we're going to take the money and put it in our deficit hole in Washington.
Because it's possible that they'll do both, right? In other
words, no, because at one point you can't raise it any higher. You know, it gets to be too onerous. Mm-hmm. So I think we should get in there first. I think New Jersey will do it next year. That's my guess. I think other places in the region will do it next year. New Jersey can't do it this year because they've already loaded up their income tax, which we will not do, increased their sales tax, which we will not do. Connecticut has already increased its sales tax, which we will not do. That's the sales tax rate. So this is a three-year fiscal stability plan. It does and at the same time that we're taking care of our fisc, we must work on our economy.
Cuomo also suggested increasing the items subject to sales tax and basing motor vehicle registration fees on the value of the vehicle rather than the weight. One of the items Cuomo said could be ripe for sales tax was over-the-counter drugs. Governor Cuomo also called for a hike in the gasoline tax. He says the state faces a potential $1.5 billion budget deficit, even if the legislature accepts his spending plan with its $1 billion in new taxes and fees. Meanwhile, neighboring Massachusetts now has the lowest bond rating in the country. This week, Moody's Investors Service dropped the Bay State's rating due to that state's continued deficit problems. As we've told you, another credit rating agency, Standard & Poor's, has issued a credit watch for New York, and Moody's is also keeping a close eye on the state's budget woes. Inga Sarda spoke with New York State Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen about the Bay State and New York's deficit situations.
From a distance, I would say the Massachusetts situation is out of control. It's in a sort of a free fall kind of a posture, and we don't want that to happen in New York. I'm not sure that it would happen April 2nd, but we don't know. And the clear way to provide for responsible budgeting is to come to an agreement that is conservative in its estimates, that is responsible and accomplishes those fiscal objectives that the raters are looking for, and to come to that agreement prior to April 1st. That's our goal, and we're going to work very hard to achieve it.
From what you can see at this point in time, what are the biggest snags?
Well, it's difficult to come up with cuts. We had a tough budget last year, and we took all the actions that are easy to take, relatively painless. And now we have a second tough one in a row. You've already cut at the fat, and now you're down to the muscle and bone. And so the cuts are somewhat painful and somewhat difficult. It is inevitable in a budget with 67% of the money going back to local governments and school districts that they too will be affected, and we want to mitigate that to every extent possible. The city of New York is in very difficult financial straits, and school boards and municipalities upstate and in the suburban areas are challenged as well. So we want to mitigate the effect on local government, but it's very difficult to do that. As a result, these cuts are not easy, and we're struggling with them, but certainly there'll be several hundred million dollars in additional spending reductions beneath what the governor recommended, and his was only a 4.5% increase in the net state budget in his executive budget proposal. And then, of course, the revenues are very controversial.
New York State Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. The Empire State's Republican Party chairman this week says his party may not have a major candidate for governor by May when the GOP state convention will be held. Inga Sarda reports.
State GOP Chairman J. Patrick Barrett had originally hoped to have a major candidate crisscrossing New York by the end of last year, but spokesman Stephen Lefevre says Republicans shouldn't worry yet.
I think what's happening here is that there's a little waiting game going on among people. I think there are a lot of people who are looking at the governor, looking at the budget, looking at the deficit, and I think the problem with the budget and the deficit is going to be compounded. And to the point where the governor's numbers are going to continue to deteriorate, especially when we're talking about excessive taxation and fees, etc. So I think what's happening here is that there's a little waiting game going on amongst potential candidates who are looking at running for governor. Now, I don't think it's a negative thing to wait until May, because, as I said, with the numbers of the governor, we believe are going to be deteriorating to the point where there's going to be, we think, a large cry for change in this state, and I think waiting till May, right before the convention, is a good move. And on the other side of the coin, I don't think the governor will be announcing his reelection bid, if in fact he wants to put his record before the voters this year again. I don't think he will announce until sometime in the middle of May this year. So I don't think it's such a bad political move when you look at all sides of the equation.
Last week, Rudolph Giuliani, who is considered the primary and strongest candidate for the Republicans, said he doubts he's going to run. How do you feel about that? Do you think he will run? What's going on there?
But again, I think Rudy, what Rudy is doing now is the same thing. It's a little waiting game. What he's doing, obviously, as everyone knows, he's visiting the county Republican committees in all corners of the state, raising money for them, helping them build their local organizations, while simultaneously seeing what kind of support he would have if, in fact, he decided to run. He has told the party we should look at other candidates. We have been looking at other candidates. Rudy has not ruled it out, and I think, again, that it's just a waiting game. We'll wait and see what happens. What's going to happen here? Is the deficit going to get worse? Is our credit rating going to go below both Massachusetts and Louisiana? Indiana? Are we going to have to raise income taxes? Are we going to have to raise gasoline taxes and fees, etc.? So I think that, combined with the fact that the governor has not announced his intentions, is giving Rudy a lot of time to see what kind of support, both financially and people-wise, from around the state. So Rudy's just taking his time, and he will make the decision, whatever that may be. And again, I think that will be sometime in May.
State GOP committee spokesman Stephen Lefevre. Meanwhile, a Republican leader says his party needs $10 million if there is to be a credible GOP opponent to Governor Cuomo's expected reelection bid. According to Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino, the problem isn't so much getting a candidate, it's getting money for that candidate. Marino says Rudy Giuliani plus $10 million could be the key to a GOP win. This is Inga Sarda.
Governor Cuomo says the Assembly's minority leader had blocked his efforts to change the site selection process for a controversial radioactive waste dump. Governor Cuomo says Clarence Rapelier doesn't support his recommendations about the siting process, recommendations the governor declined to discuss. Neither Rapelier nor Cuomo gave details of the governor's proposal, but the Buffalo News reported this week that Cuomo had proposed delaying the siting process at least temporarily. Republican Rapelier says Cuomo's proposals are unsatisfactory. He says only major revisions in the makeup of the commission and its procedures are acceptable. Rapelier's Assembly District includes some of the sites under consideration by the state for the dump. The search for a site for the federally mandated dump has touched off heated demonstrations and scores of arrests in Allegheny and Cortland counties. The state special commission has narrowed its search to five sites in those two counties. Cuomo's aides say the governor's plan would allow the state to consider other disposal options. They include shipping the waste to other states that, so far, have refused to consider such shipments. Another possibility is that a lawsuit filed by Cuomo could overturn a federal law forcing states to take responsibility for the waste. Rapelier, a frequent guest of ours, refused all comment on this issue for our program. Speaking of environmental-related issues, the battle over Cuomo's proposed Environmental Bond Act continues. For more on that story, here's Bruce Robertson.
New York State's chief executive has been out campaigning to gain public support for his proposed Environmental Bond Act. Governor Cuomo this week announced the creation of a private committee comprised of environmental and business leaders that will work to increase support for the bond. Cuomo says we hear so much about negative issues like crime and drugs. The environment, he says, is one of the last bright spots in our lives.
The environment is the one solid, pure, don't say moral because you'll get into trouble, but you could get away with it, issue that we have. And there's something particularly nice about it, because it is the one clear judgment by the people that they want to do something for someone else, where their own self-interest is only remote. Because the truth is that no matter what you do about acid rain, you probably won't save a single fish in a single lake for yourself. But you will for your children and their children and the children after them and the people who drew the circle around the Adirondacks when they were 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 years of age themselves, weren't thinking about all the wonderful time they would spend tramping through the pristine beauty of God's gift. It was this judgment without sermons, without homilies, without even writing about it, maybe without fully appreciating. It was this judgment that you're giving to the whole community.
Last week on the Legislative Gazette, we told you about another newly formed group comprised primarily of business representatives. That group has criticized Governor Cuomo, claiming that far too much money is being allotted for land acquisitions. There was also some fear that development in the state would be squelched under the governor's plan. Apparently, though, all developers do not feel that way. Louis Coletti is president of the New York Building Congress, the organization representing builders in the New York City area.
We're especially pleased that the governor has seen fit to commit $100 million to an esplanade on the west side, which we believe is the cornerstone of developing a waterfront which all New Yorkers could be proud of. But even more important, we're here today to hopefully send a message to the community of New York State, New York City. And that is the time for us to put down our feelings about development and anti-development have come to an end. We need to form a consensus from all constituencies to move forward and make New York State and New York City a better place to live and improve the quality of life in the city and state.
Louis Coletti, president of the New York Building Congress. Meanwhile, dozens of elected officials representing every region of the state have endorsed the governor's plan. Syracuse Mayor Thomas Young added a bit of humor during the governor's announcement.
Before leaving Syracuse this morning, I was at a junior high school, seventh grade at Lincoln. And one of the questions asked by these seventh graders was this: do you really believe that you and the federal government and Governor Cuomo can clean up Onondaga Lake. That kind of cynicism from seventh graders, I think, speaks at all. We simply can't afford to repeat the sins of omissions of our grandparents. We can discuss the various merits of the different components of the Bond Act, such as stewardship versus municipal and urban park grants. It's a little bit like discussing the merits of the Syracuse basketball program versus St. John's. Both are excellent programs. One might go a bit further than the other. But in the end, the question is, what kind of an environment will we leave our children a decade from now? Will it be one closer to ruin or one closer to a rebirth, thanks to the courage of the governor and the support of all of you in this room, certainly behind me? I'm confident that it's going to be a better state.
Syracuse Mayor Thomas Young, officials from Binghamton, Buffalo, and the Hudson Valley were also on hand to support the borrowing plan that Cuomo has proposed. Reporting for Environmental Issues on the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Here with us again is our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, who is joined by another frequent guest, New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker. As usual, the two had some vigorous discussion about a host of political issues.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post. Well, the budget battle rages, Fred.
It does, Alan. It's getting to be that kind of time of year again, and the rhetoric is hot. It's an unusual year, and we only have really a week or so to go before the April 1 start of the fiscal year, and I predict no budget on time.
No budget on time. Now, let me ask you this, Fred. It seems to me that what we're dealing with here is a very interesting situation.
It is, Alan. I've never seen anything like it.
In which everybody knows we're really in the bucket, right? I mean, let's start with everybody knows it's bad.
Well, that's pretty much true, although how bad is obviously a source of continuing controversy.
Okay. Two, since everybody knows it's bad, we come down to the point of who's going to play statesman and do what's right, as opposed to be political and see if you can get the last bit of blood out of the other guy.
I don't know. I mean, that's one way to frame it. I think they're all political. I'm not sure any of them are statesmen, or all of them are statesmen. Nobody wants the state to be hurt. On the other hand, to frame it as the good guys and the bad guys, I think, is inaccurate. This is an ideological struggle over the direction of the state in terms of its funding and taxing programs. New York is a very high-tax state. The question really at hand, I think, is whether the state's going to continue to be the number one high-tax state in the nation or not. The governor and the Democrats in the Assembly are saying it should be, continue with the highest level of programming and taxing. Right now, the Senate Republicans and the state Senate, the majority Republicans, are saying it shouldn't be, that the state should start changing. I think they're both honorable positions. They're very different philosophically.
You know, Fred, at a time when we're hearing reports of overtaxing, overbonding, over-indebtedness in New York State, do you think that this is affecting the way in which people are going to perceive this bond issue, the environmental bond issue?
Alan, you're right. First of all, there's no guarantee that that bond issue is going to even reach the public yet. We both know the legislature has to pass a resolution authorizing the bond issue to be on the November ballot. Just the other day, I saw a story in the New York Times that quoted your friend Maurice Hinchey, who I think is on the board of WAMC and also is the influential chairman of the Assembly Conservation Committee, is saying he didn't see the governor fighting that hard for this bond issue. If it gets on the ballot, if the state comptroller Ned Regan supports it, I still think it's doubtful that it'll pass, or it's certainly questionable whether or not it'll pass.
Well, why is Cuomo doing it?
Which one?
The bond issue.
The bond issue is doing it because politicians like spending programs. He's under a lot of pressure to show that he's committed to the environment and to deal with some other problems like solid waste management. And instead of appropriating money as it comes in, tax, and then pay for the, pay as you go, as they call it, this is an easy way out. You borrow the money 20 years down the line, and you can get the credit right now for the programs. I think it's a political move, and it's also, obviously, one that a great many people support.
And you don't have to be here 20 years later to pay it.
Alan, I mean, the governor rails a lot. We both know it about the federal deficit, but we here in New York have a huge New York State deficit that's been growing leaps and bounds, kind of like the way the federal deficit's been growing. Ned Regan's been warning about that. Most New Yorkers, I don't think, realize it, but it's very, very serious. We're paying at least hundreds of millions of dollars a year, maybe a little higher than that, every year now, just in interest payments to carry the debt that the state has.
Well, you spoke about Maurice Hinchey. Now, Hinchey had a plan earlier to raise the sales tax a penny to pay to get a super fund to do all this environmental work and essentially not to have to pay any interest payments because we'd have raised the money up front.
Right.
Well, what do you think about that?
Well, it's an interesting, provocative idea. Maurice always comes up with them, but there's so little political courage around this place, and I'm sitting at the Capitol well now, and I say that, that nobody is interested in endorsing a plan like that. Look at New York City. New York City is in worse shape than New York State. It's a tragedy down there, record high murder. Mayor Dinkins was elected claiming he was going to be the toughest mayor in history on crime. He's already cut off one new class of city policemen, and now he's talking about even some police layoffs. You know, why isn't he proposing a new tax in order to put cops back on the streets and get the crime rate down? It's just very, very difficult, and it's not a time of great political courage.
Fred, the next question here becomes, how is all of this politics playing into the emerging Senate races in New York State?
I don't think it is yet, Alan. We'll see what happens. Clearly, if the Senate Republicans wind up getting cast as the bad guys that somehow harmed the state financially and made the state look bad, that would be an issue the Democrats will use against them. On the other hand, if they emerge from this fight as the champions of restraining state growth and trying to protect the middle class by not raising taxes, that would help them. Right now, I don't see any opportunities for either side to exploit this very complicated issue, and I think we could both agree that most New Yorkers yet don't really understand what's happening with the state budget.
Let's talk about the census for a moment.
Sure.
I'm real interested in that. Talk about getting the Chutzpah Award. It seems to me that there were a whole grown group of homeless advocates who were saying, let's not allow our people to get counted because the people who are doing the counting aren't going to do good enough a job, so let's avoid it. In the meantime, New York State has a lot of homeless, has to pay for those homeless, and the very people who should be helping to pay by making sure everybody gets counted are not doing it.
Alan, I think you're right. What amused me is seeing one of the homeless people on TV just last night who was saying that he was very happy to cooperate with Census, and he hoped that they would try to reach as many homeless people as possible. With many of the homeless advocates, not all of them, but many of them, you're dealing with politicians, and I think they have a vested interest, Alan, financially and maybe psychologically, in trying to make the case that the homeless are far larger in numbers than they may actually be. The Census is trying to get an objective count. I mean, if they could come up with an alternative way of getting one, I think their position would be more plausible, but I think in part they're opposing the Census's efforts because they prefer to have the number seem to be larger than it may in fact be.
Okay, let's talk for a second now about Mario Cuomo and both the governorship and the presidency.
Sure.
You're walking the halls, and there's always a lobbyist who's willing to whisper in your ear, he's not running for governor.
I heard it last night.
So what do you think?
I think he is running for governor. I don't think he's running for president. I think he'll be almost or virtually unopposed for governor, but I don't think he has a future as president now. I think the time has passed him by. Now, things can change, but this terrible fiscal situation here in New York that we were just talking about is obviously taking a toll on the governor. It took a toll on your governor. Mike Dukakis is now sort of a national laughingstock, the miracle of Massachusetts.
But it's amazing that Mike Dukakis declares almost 2 years in advance that he can't run and he's wounded and he's a lame duck, and this guy seems to grow stronger.
Grow stronger where? He's under attack from fellow Democratic governors. Just the other day, Doug Wilder, the new Democratic governor of Virginia, a rising star in the Democratic Party, was saying Mario Cuomo is an example of what's wrong with the Democratic Party. That would not have been heard just a couple of years ago. You had Bill Clinton in Arkansas, a Democratic governor.
Yeah, well, wait a second. He may be doing a kill job for his own guy, Chuck Robb.
But he may not be. In fact, Alan, the currents in this country show that liberalism now is on the decline. Right now, about 19 or 20%, this is a Democratic poll, has shown 19 or 20% of American voters consider themselves liberal. And Mario Cuomo, whether you like it or not, is considered the sort of archetypal Northeastern liberal Democrat.
Well, I mean, we can argue this till the cows come home. I think certainly you're right that liberalism is not doing well.
And this guy is the personification of what's the fight here over?
Well,
it's tax and spend.
Well, I'll just tell you what it's over. It's over the fact that every individual has within them sort of a generous side and a me side. Right now, a lot of people think that the politics of America, and I think you're probably right in your assessment, is the me side is winning. But there is an ability on some politicians' parts, Fred, to reach into the soul and say, hey, look, we're better than that. And Cuomo can do that better than anybody I know.
Well, many people talk or use that rhetoric, Alan. And the governor, as you know, is excellent at doing it. But what the bottom line is, what the motivation is, to accept a politician's words on their face, it seems to me, is something a journalist has to be very reluctant to do.
The New York Post, Fred Dicker, speaking with our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok. Now, here with a look at some other happenings this week in state politics is Paul Rosenthal with the Legislative Notebook.
The state Senate has approved legislation that would raise New York's minimum wage from $3.35 an hour to $4.25. The Assembly has already passed the measure. The wages of more than 580,000 New Yorkers would increase by a total of $230 million annually under the proposal. The bill will conform the state's minimum wage with the federal minimum wage. That's necessary to ensure that employees of small businesses receive at least the wage set by the federal legislation. The Senate has also approved two bills designed to help alleviate the medical malpractice crisis. One measure would limit the non-economic damage element in a malpractice verdict to $300,000. It would also establish a medical indemnity fund as an additional collateral source in malpractice actions. The other bill would set up the malpractice fund to pay all future health care expenses for a plaintiff who's been awarded more than $100,000 for future medical expenses. The proposed fund would also pay all health care claims for the injured party without limit. The fund would be financed through a mandatory assessment on insurers and associations empowered to write medical malpractice insurance, self-insured or uninsured hospitals, health maintenance organizations, and physicians. The chorus of those crying for more money continues to grow. As with so many other organizations, the National Education Association of New York claims its slice of the budgetary pie is far too small. Gregory Nash, vice president of the organization, says Governor Cuomo's proposed 2% increase in the state's education budget just won't do.
Yes, we're hearing from the federal government that there are 6 new goals for education. The governors have recently come out with 21 objectives for education, and yet nobody's talking about any money for those things. We're perplexed as to how people are going to change what's going on in schools and improve what's going on in schools if there's going to be no money to do it. We're told by the federal government that they have no intention of funding. We're told by the state government that they can't afford to fund. And we're being told by the local taxpayer that they have funded enough. The question here is, does anybody really want to invest in their kids, in the kids of the United States and of New York State?
Nash says the proposed 2% increase, or $240 million, will not suffice. He'd like to see that increase to 4.5%. The state health care system is in critical condition. Thousands of people brought that message this week to the state capitol, where they rallied in support of a financial bailout for New York State hospitals. The State Hospital Association says the hospital's poor fiscal condition would be worsened by Governor Cuomo's proposed reform of the hospital reimbursement system. Hospitals claimed losses of more than $1 billion in both 1988 and 1989. Cuomo wants to increase the state's bad debt and charity care allowance. He also wants to boost reimbursement levels for inpatient services by 6.8% for the next fiscal year and set maximum costs for outpatient services. Daniel Sisto, president of the State Hospital Association, says hospitals need an estimated $540 million in relief money this year. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is produced by Inga Sarda with technical assistance from Phil Sluzars. This program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at area code 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.